following is a presentation of the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
Now Cisco walks to the dot. The shutout scores! Do you believe that? Owen Sound wins it! Maxim Cisco, second of the game! And people are staring at me like I stole their money. And the attack stunned the Greyhounds in game number one.
Who is going to be the overtime hero? Peter Stratus up along the boards. Nobody there except for Liam Hammond. Now an odd-man rush for Sudbury. David Levin's got Ruzicka. Shot! Another pad save. Another shot! Where is it? To the net! It's a goal! Sudbury wins! David Levin! Sudbury wins! Sudbury wins! Sudbury wins! Sudbury win!
The Ottawa 67s have dethroned the defending OHL champions. They sweep the Bulldogs in four straight, and for the first time since 2012, the 67s are off to round two of the playoffs.
Now to Drake Pilon, 5 seconds left to go, 3 seconds left to go, 2 seconds, and that is gonna do it! The Sudbury Wolves sweep this four-game series over the Mississauga Steelheads.
Murray in the slot! Locked again, Jenkins scores! Blaine Jenkins! The Spirit win it, and they're going to the second round.
To his defense, and the Greyhounds will advance to the second round of the OHL playoffs.
It's done. The Niagara-Einsteins are off to the second round of the OHL playoffs.
The Generals think it's over, they'll let it go. The Oshawa Generals eliminate the Peterborough team.
Here comes Jason Robertson, 40 seconds on the power play. Lot in the slot. Robertson with the game on his stick. Score! Jason Robertson! Overtime magic!
Almost 5 to go on the power play. Simulavsky comes to Feliber. He shoots, and he scores! It's tied, Feliber! He ends the longest game in Ottawa 67's history. It's back-to-back sweeps, and the 67s are off to the conference finals as Feliber makes it 8 straight wins to these playoffs.
5 seconds. Plastic. Oldowski clears for the first time in 17 years of Saginaw Spirit Hockey. The Spirit are third round of bound after a sweep of the Hounds. By the Hubs last season, the Spirit mark back to beat Sault Ste. Marie in 6 and head to the Western Conference Final for the first time in team history.
It's a victory on Athol Street. The Oshawa Generals eliminate the Niagara Ice Dogs. And for the first time since 2015, the Generals are off to the Conference Final.
Now Radcliffe will drop it back. The Storm become the fifth team in the Ontario Hockey League to come back from a 3-0 deficit. This one is over. The Storm win 6-3 and win the series in 7.
Here's McLeod moving in.
Got it in a goal!
What a goal!
What a goal by Ryan McLeod! Unbelievable play! The Spirit win it in overtime!
Here's Max Simovich, right wing boards. He centers it, goes to the left side, shot, and they score! It's tied, Feliber! 20 seconds in overtime! 3 straight sweeps for the 67s. They win it 2-1, and they're off to the OHL final for the first time since 2005.
And Schnarr is set to take this face off, wins the draw, goes to the boards. The ball Storm of the Western Conference champions! And we're going to the Ontario Hockey League Final against the Ottawa 67s. They have done it again, a 7th elimination game, and they win 3-2 to take this series in 7 games.
Keating dumps it down, the horn sounds, and Ottawa has a 2-0 lead in the OHL Championship Series.
And there it is. A team of resilience, a team of destiny. The Guelph Storm are your 2018-19 OHL champs. The comeback kids do it again in fine style at home, the J. Ross Robertson Cup champs.
Welcome to the OHL Fanboys Podcast as we preview the 101st Memorial Cup from Halifax. I am a very happy Steve McClain. With me is Brian Thompson. And Brian, I can't believe this is our fifth Memorial Cup that we're about to do.
This one's a little different because now we can't just, like, watch the games. Now you're still super fan, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you can watch the games, I guess, but yeah, sorry, I got to be super fan for this one.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I did it 2 years ago. It was fun.
Well, it's probably going to be stressful before it's fun. Well, it depends on how.
Yeah. It's sickening.
Yes, I remember you not even in really in your seat, but almost like sitting on your knees with your hands over your mouth, chin on the dasher boards just for those last, you know, however long Windsor had that one goal lead for that they were nursing, and just the terror on your face on every shot, and then of course the jubilation you had for the win. It's just like
it's amazing
that.
What makes you religious, isn't it?
Very much so. I don't know who I think I had to sell my soul three times for Guelph to just to get here this year.
Well, I bought two of them. One was Kijiji, and the other, I think it was Facebook Marketplace, but that guy on there is just an asshole about, okay, Steve's soul is high commodity. I'm like, there's three of these things. It's not that high. That joke went nowhere. But my point is, Steve, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm a very, very happy guy. I was a season ticket holder in Brampton. Well, I was only a season ticket holder in Brampton for 5 years, but going to games for a lot longer than that. And there was the one sniff at the final. And now here in Guelph, season tickets for six seasons, and we got two OHL titles in that time. And, you know, Guelph, they, you know, four OHL titles in 28 seasons of play. And there's teams in this league who've been around a lot longer than that who've never won anything. And, you know, I feel kind of thankful that I'm with a, you know, a fan of a franchise that actually, you know, gets things done. Would have never thought it 3 years ago when they were finishing with 13 wins last in the OHL. And hell, there were times earlier this season they didn't look like a title contender. There was times in this playoff they didn't look like a title contender, but son of a bitch if they didn't pull it off.
Do you still give it like a ring to Ryan Merkley?
No.
Ah! Okay.
He's the Peterborough Pete now. He's not part of this.
He should get a share.
No.
He was a big part of the franchise that got you guys where you were.
No. You don't get a ring.
Just
after.
No.
No, you got traded. You didn't get a ring. No, screw him.
Oh. Fuck him.
Nick Suzuki did a hell of a lot more for us than Ryan Merkley ever did.
Nick Suzuki. No, name's not ringing a bell.
42 points in the playoffs. They brought the trophy out. It was just like, oh yeah, here comes Nick's trophy. Like, not even a question of who was winning the 99 award this year.
You guessed it, Frank Stallone.
Where's well, you know, there's a goalie in a movie coming out soon who probably deserves an MVP, but you know.
Frank D'Angelo?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Can we give him the 99 award?
Don't start 0-2 in the memmer.
Yeah, well, we've already... Yeah. That's the thing. I guess you have a bit more wiggle room in a 7-game series, even though starting 0-2 in a 7-game series is never a good idea either. No OHL team had ever come back twice in one series when down 0-2 in the same playoff, and Guelph just did it three times in a row. Like, that's just insanity.
Do you regret not dropping the first two to Kitchener?
Yeah, they actually swept Kitchener, so...
Oh, that one was different because you had home ice.
And actually, in three of these four series, they managed to win four straight games against each team. They would lose a bunch in a couple of them, but they got four straight against Kitchener, London, and Ottawa, and they got three straight against Saginaw.
Like, just... So they had 11 home games in the playoffs out of a possible 14? 13. Out of a possible 13, they had 11 home playoff games.
Yes.
That's some good revenue for the Storm, man.
Yeah, they brought in some coin this time. I know we actually had more in 2014, even though all of our series went five games, but We had home
ice.
Yeah,
home ice.
So we actually had 12 games that year, but still 11 games. Man, the place was packed and loud for the finals. It was fantastic.
Was it a bit of a bummer winning in the afternoon as opposed to an evening puck drop?
Hell no.
That's what I say. As much as I hate the freaking afternoon puck drops, you at least have time to party.
I totally did. And thankfully for me, because I actually worked a half shift that day, or a little more than a half shift. So I was up at 2:30 in the morning. So I was thankful for the afternoon.
Oh, that was a night puck drop for you.
Yeah, exactly. So I was thankful for getting the game done by, you know, the game was done by, I guess, 20 after 4 itself. We didn't leave the rink until about 5:30 and managed to, you know, come home, have some dinner. I had a couple of celebratory drinks. Didn't do anything too crazy because, like you in the past, by the time that was all done, I was out and I was asleep by 9:30.
That's the lifestyle, man. It's no fucking bender.
It's also weird at this time of year now. Like, it's like your team just won a championship. You celebrated on, you know, in the building and on the ice for over an hour. You go home, you have dinner, you have a couple drinks. It's been like 4 hours since the game's finished, and it's still like the sun's still up. It's a really weird feeling.
Now, you got to explain this to people because you get something weird in Guelph that no one else gets. Who do you have to blow to get on the ice? This is twice now.
Yeah. It's really weird. No one stops you. Well, first of all, so
Spitfire fans can't be trusted to go on the ice.
No.
Like, I'm not jealous, but it's just like, do the ushers all fuck off and you get one hero who opens the door to the penalty box and then there's just a huge mad rush? Like, when does security clock out?
So you've seen in Guelph where the Zamboni door is, right? Like how it's kind of just inside the blue line.
Okay.
And there's big doors there. I remember 5 years ago, it was kind of like after, you know, the players did the laps of their trophy and they did the team picture. And that's kind of when like family and billets and stuff started to get to go out. And then eventually, you know, a buddy of mine went out. He kind of nudged me. He's like, we should try and go out. And I'm like, man, we're not going to be able to get out there. And he's like, okay. And then he walked off. And then 2 minutes later, I looked up and he's on the ice. And I was like, how the hell did you get out there? And he goes, just walk out.
He's like, you had no faith. You don't get to enjoy this.
Yeah. So same thing happened this year, but except this year, everyone came out way earlier. Like parents and billets were on the ice before Branch even handed over the Robertson Cup.
Were they segregated?
They were kind of, they were a little bit away. It's not like they were right up in there with the players or anything, but, you know, there was a hell of a lot of people there on the ice when the Storm got handed the trophy. And by the time that the team photo was taken, there had to have been a couple hundred people out there. At least that's what it looked like. And it wasn't long after the picture was taken that I eventually went out there as well once again. And again, no one stopped you. You just walked right out.
That's so weird.
Now, mind you, by the time I went out there too, like, a lot of people had left too. Like, the stands were emptying out and everything. But there were a lot of fans that went out too. Like, I saw many, many fans out there. They were mainly the ones, though, I didn't see too many, like, fair weather people, like people you don't recognize, right? Like a lot of the people I saw out there were like, oh, I know of them and them and that. Like people you don't even know them, you see them though. It's like, okay, I know this person comes every game, right? So it wasn't like 2,000, you know, drunks rush the ice or something like that. But
Windsor.
Yeah. But it was really cool. You know, I, of course, I've been wearing Nate Schnarr's jersey for the entire playoffs, so his family, like, was like, Steve, and, you know, they wanted to talk for a bit, and Nate came over, and he's like, well, let's get a picture with the trophy, and I was like, well, okay. So
I was going to say, like, there's a couple different pictures of you with players and the trophy. It's like, was there a line, or?
I guess kind of, like, well, first of all, you know, my girlfriend Vanessa, she has a Nick Suzuki jersey, so she wanted to get that signed. And there was kind of, it wasn't really a line. It was like kind of a line, an informal line, but it was coming from all sides of them. And a lot of it were kids, and we were trying to let the kids in first, obviously. But eventually it was just kind of, you get closer to him, and eventually it's like, okay, here's a marker. Can you sign my, you know, my jersey?
The kids, okay, there are so many times where you let the kids go first. You catch a puck, you give it to a kid. The autograph signings, yeah. A championship celebration, you are at par with the children. The children can fucking wait their turn.
Yeah.
Now, if the players are being cool, and it's like, yeah, everyone come on in, that's fine, but... I don't know. It's just my attitude. It's like, these players got better things to do. I'm lucky if whatever. Not that I get a picture with any players or anything, but it's just like, damn, man, no. This is the one time the kids can piss off.
Well, normally I'm not a picture guy. First of all, at first we were just trying to get my girlfriend's jersey signed by Suzuki, right? We did that, and then it was just kind of, we were out on the ice just talking with people and whatnot. Like my girlfriend and I got a picture of ourselves standing on the ice with the scoreboard in the background, stuff like that. But then eventually, you know, Schnarr, you know, came up to me because, you know, he's seen me a few times. I had gotten him to sign my jersey like a year ago, and his family has seen me a bunch of times. So they were like, say, go grab Nate, go get a picture with him, go get the trophy. And so it was like, it was kind of cool in the sense of like, you know, I was out there wearing his game-worn jersey from the night he scored his first goal in the OHL, and so I thought that was kind of a neat picture, and I've always liked him as a player. The only other picture I got with any player was me, my girlfriend, and another couple friend of mine, and the four of us were around Nick Suzuki, and I really didn't want to be in it, but I was like, everyone's like, no, come on, Steve, so I was like, okay, fine. I'm not huge on getting my picture with a bunch of players, but I make an exception now and then. And, of course, winning a championship is a big part of that.
That's just awesome, man. Like, it's right up there with the Owen Sound celebration, where it's just like, let it be a fun community event.
Yeah.
And, obviously, you can trust your fan base to do that. With Windsor, it's just like, no. Hell no.
It wouldn't be happening, eh?
No, not no. I remember they had extra security.
Yeah.
Because the first time they won, everyone was celebrating on the ice, and a few fans broke into the Spitfires dressing room and took all of Taylor Hall's sticks.
So, you know, a couple assholes. Because
there's profit to be made.
Yeah, a couple assholes have to ruin it for everybody.
More than a couple assholes in Windsor, but I appreciate that.
Fair. Yeah, it's just, it makes for a really cool moment. They had the hats and the t-shirts available online, like, within an hour of the game finishing, so already got those picked up. Pricey as hell, as you would expect for a championship merch, but screw it.
Where do they run?
40 for a hat, 30 for a shirt.
I never bought the Memorial Cup shirt after we won in 2017 because they won at 35. And I'm like, that'll be at Value Village in a year.
It's funny you mentioned that. The morning of Game 6, somebody posted they found Guelph's 2014 OHL Championship shirt in Value Village for like, you know, $5 or whatever.
Exactly. Like, yeah, it's really nice to have when it happens, but... Ain't no t-shirt worth $30.
No, definitely not. But at the time, it's just like, you know,
no,
you're
I
like,
get
fuck
it.
We just won the title.
You're drunk on happiness. Yeah, I get it.
Exactly. And just, again, just the way they pulled this off. I mean, this time, they were kind of the underdog in the final. You know, this is the first time a 4 seed has won the OHL title since 2001.
Christ.
And the last team to do that, winning as the 4 seed, was actually Ottawa. Which was their last title. But, yeah, it's been a long time. I think I'd mentioned, I'm not sure if I mentioned earlier, about this is in the last 30 years, Guelph and London have the most OHL titles at 4 each. Now, London's won them all since 2005, and Guelph's have come since 98. Also, the really weird coincidence of Guelph last changed their logo in the summer of 97, going into the 97-98 season. Their first year with that logo, they win the title with George Burnett as their coach. He was like a one and done that year as a coach in Guelph. And then they go and change their logo again 21 years later, And they win the title with Burnett as the coach again. And both times they did it, they beat Ottawa to do it. And won it on home ice both times.
See, and that's the thing. No matter, the Spitz won their first or their second OHL title with a brand new logo. And it's just like, you can shit on the logo all you want, but the second you win a title with the logo,
yeah,
it could have a swastika on it. And you'd be like, I don't know, man. We won a title. Life is good.
I think I'd mentioned on the
did
show.
Did you see the hidden swastika in Guelph's logo, by the way?
No, I did not. Is that what we're going with?
People, if you follow us on Twitter, if you find the hidden swastika in the Guelph Storm logo, send it to at Steve McLean 888. There will be a prize for the winner.
Oh, God.
Hashtag Guelph swastika.
No.
Oh, my God.
And that's when Steve lost his pass.
Oh, yeah, the memmer.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's not... It's not over for Guelph. They got three more teams to go up against now. Like you said, don't go 0-2 to start again.
No.
We've known for a couple weeks that, well, we've known for a whole year that Halifax would be there. They are the hosts. And we've known now for about 2 weeks that the Rouyn Noranda Huskies would be there. They did win the Q title over Halifax in 6 games. And representing the W, it's the Prince Albert Raiders, just their second WHL title. Their last one came in 1985. They beat the Vancouver Giants Game 7 overtime. So, damn. You know, for a team that was a one seed, they had a tight ending to it. And they had a 3-1 series lead, and Vancouver got back into that series. So, but in the end, Prince Albert gets it. So the one seed in the Q and the Dub both win the title.
Yeah, we're so done with that now. Let's let more crazy seeds win titles.
It's just, it's this title, to me, means way more than 2014. I'll say that. Now, 2014 is still awesome because it was my first championship as a fan. But of course, them beating the Battalion right after the whole move thing, that'll always be special. But at the same time, it's just like I almost like inherited that team because I showed up to Guelph and became a season ticket holder, and they had pretty much already had that championship team built. Other than making the trade to get Reichel and Ebert halfway through the year, you know, that was already a championship team, and they finished first that year, and they certainly had close games in the final that year against North Bay, but they won all their series in 5 games. Like, it was, in hindsight, you know, they were the team to beat, right? Like, they were the favorites. This time it's so much different. Not only with the crazy playoff that Guelph had with all the comebacks and everything, but on top of that, the fact that 3 years ago this team was dead last, a team that won 13 games and they won like 7 of those games at a 10 game stretch that year. Like, they were so bad in 2015-16. And there's a couple of guys on this team who were on that team 3 years ago. So this time, as a fan, I got to watch the whole build-up from a team that went from finishing dead last and missing the playoffs 2 years in a row to becoming OHL champions again. This one means a little bit more to me this time. And the way that the games, you know, the series went, it's just incredible how they pulled this off.
I don't know how this is going to work for you in terms of the playoffs, like, as we get further. Like, you've already knocked out 2 1 seeds, right? Ottawa and London?
Yeah, both ones in the each conference, yeah. And we beat 3 division champions.
You've got 3 more 1 seeds to play now in a span of 4 days.
Yeah, Halifax did win their division. Did they win their conference?
They won their conference.
They won their conference. Lovely. 3 more 1 seeds. Bring it on. It's going to be
tough. That's a tall order. Yeah. Now, we've been saying that's a tall order every other week for 6 weeks.
Yeah, Guelph was supposed to be done like 5 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, we were ready to fire George Benet. We had Tony Saxon on this show doing an interview that was basically like, what went wrong with Guelph this year? It's crazy how things change. I mean, Guelph...
I'd still fire Burnett, but...
and what's really crazy is Guelph actually now has, like, this is like the most time off they've had all playoff. Because with them going seven every series, they were only getting, they had one day off between the London and Saginaw series. They had 2 days off between Saginaw and Ottawa. Now they're getting, you know, what, six days off? Their next game is Saturday when they play Rouyn Noranda. So they kind of luck out, I guess. They don't have to play in the opening game. But then again, is that, you know, will that hurt them, right? They haven't had this much time off in between series before. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. So when they do start, they, because they're, you know, not playing in their own league, as the host is concerned, they got to do the dreaded back-to-back games in the round robin. They got to play Rouyn Noranda on Saturday afternoon, the only afternoon game of the whole Memorial Cup, and then they play against Halifax on Sunday night. And then,
which, there's my schedule bitching. This is the 1 year they should have reversed the Saturday-Sunday and had the night game on the Saturday and the afternoon game on the Sunday. Because, I'm sorry, who's watching Guelph Halifax when Game of Thrones final ever episode is on at 9 o'clock? They schedule around literally everything in the OHL now, and I'm very, very, I've always been happy that, you know, Super Bowl, they finally don't schedule games. Grey Cup, for whatever reason, they don't schedule games. And they've been really cool about that stuff. But come on, man. You think I'm missing, like, sorry, after a second intermission of Guelph Halifax, it's off. We're having a Game of Thrones party. They should have moved that puck drop. I don't care what Sportsnet wants. That's just dumb.
What's also kind of crazy is the fact that all the games local time will be late. Like, well, not late starts, but they're all going to start at 8 p.m. local time.
That's fine, though.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want it any other later, I guess, but
No, but like 8 o'clock for a hockey game, I would still go to that even if that was Eastern.
Yeah.
Lord knows I've done enough Monday night football games that start at fucking 9.
No, yeah, that would have been too late. But as they've gotten into the thing too. Remember when they wouldn't actually release a time for the final until they kind of almost knew who was going to be in it? But the last few years now, they've kind of just,
it's prime time.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, we're putting this on at 7 o'clock now, and usually it's like 7 Eastern, depending. You know, I'm trying to remember last year in Regina if it was. Was it 7 Eastern or 8 Eastern, I think? Something like that.
It was like 7. I remember barbecuing before.
Yeah. So, yeah, Prince Albert, Rouyn Noranda, and Halifax. I mean, you and I don't really have much to say about those teams because you and I haven't watched those teams other than the fact that we know, you know, I know that Rouyn Noranda won 59 games this year, which is the same as the 05 Knights, and they kind of don't, they don't get talked in the same breath as them, and they won, was it 25 straight at one point this season? Was, felt, you know, they tied the record for most wins in a row, didn't break it. And I know Prince Albert has been like the team to beat in the West all year, and of course they have Ian Scott as their goaltender, who was Mikey DiPietro's counterpart for Team Canada at the World Juniors in net. So you got a couple really good,
yeah,
teams.
Yeah, don't
there.
Hurt him too.
We just leave goalies in our wake.
Like, yeah, now with these one game each things, you don't have time to hurt all these goalies.
Oh, and I heard the excuse that apparently London had the flu during their series with
us.
Oh,
fuck off.
So I did see someone say, you know, Guelph only won because London had the flu, Saginaw lost their goalie, and Ottawa lost their goalie. And I said, even if all that is true, I do not care.
Fuck them.
I felt like if you ever saw Hot Tub Time Machine, Lou at the end of it, where he's like, was it wrong?
If they had the flu, then why did half these guys go to AHL teams right away?
Yeah, exactly.
Bouchard's playing in like San Francisco or something.
Yeah.
Is he infecting that whole fucking team too? Piss off with these shitty excuses. I think Dale Hunter just wanted to get to work on the World Juniors.
Yeah, because he got named coach like,
everyone already knew that. Why are they doing the press conference now?
Yeah. But he got named,
and Thanos is the GM.
He got named coach, I think, after game 3 of that series, though, didn't he?
I don't know.
It was around that time, like, where they're up.
No, but it was, like, the worst-kept secret.
Yeah, it was. They had, whatever. Yeah.
Do we have time to talk about other OHL stuff real quick?
What do you got, sir?
I don't know. Do you want to talk about the negative story out of Niagara or the negative story out of Hamilton?
Let's go with, we put Niagara off.
Spin the wheel.
Yeah, we put Niagara off a week ago, so I guess we should talk about that a little bit.
Go for it.
Oh, it's up to me. I don't even know where to go with this. I've been so happy. I don't want to talk about negative stories, but
okay, we won't. Save for another time.
Yeah, all I know is that Niagara promised a player money and they didn't follow through with that. Apparently, though, I think they still denying all these. I don't know.
They're denying that, and then they're denying sale rumors.
Yeah, there was rumors of a sale coming along. You know what I always notice, though, and this is no disrespect to those players, but every time you hear about one of these guys getting, you know, the under-the-table payments and stuff, or promised extra schooling, it's just like, it's not like these were, like, superstar players. Like, these guys were, like, third-liners at best.
Well, superstar players don't need the education package, Steve. They're still playing hockey.
That's fair enough.
Okay, now Hamilton.
Apparently, you know, their owner, Michael Ann Lauer, is...
Fuck him.
...pulled out the old, give me a better rink or I'm moving clause.
Yeah, yeah. How about you move your ass back to Belleville, dickwad?
Comes in, what was it? Hamilton won the title their third season. They've only played four seasons now, and he's already like, give me a new rink. Now, to be fair, Tops does need work. And I guess the whole thing with the city there is like... They said if they want Cops to be a viable building, they need to put $30 million into it. Whereas, apparently, if they build a new rink that would be about 7,000 seats, they can do that for $60 to $70 million. And Ann Lauer has said he will match whatever the city puts up. Like, so if the city puts up $30 million to build this thing, he'll put in another $30 million himself. So...
And the city's still telling him to fuck himself?
The city just basically won't make a decision one way or the other. They don't know what to do.
Yeah, you know, you cheat on your girl and you end up going with that girl you cheated with, and all of a sudden she's not fucking making any money and you're screwed. Well, you made your bed, bud. You chose to uproot a very proven city that just needed some upgrades to the rink. Now you're in Hamilton, now you're fucked with that rink and piping that may break. Hey, go enjoy Brampton for a little bit. You know, that's a viable city. Maybe Guelph will share their rink. Maybe not.
No.
I sympathize with any of these Hamilton Bulldog fans because they didn't do anything wrong.
No, they got some good fans down there.
But Ann Lauer, no. I have no sympathy for him or anything that's happening with him. To hell with him.
There you go. And that's your Memorial Cup preview.
Well, I don't know any of the other three teams.
No, no. Well, and that's why we...
I tried to watch... I usually listen to some dub games, but I just worked so much overtime this year, and yeah. I just haven't had time.
Brian?
I will be watching the member, though.
Yeah. This is why we bring in professionals to give us the previews of the other teams that we haven't seen.
Exactly.
So, with that in mind, we're going to head out west first. And we will welcome back to the show an old friend. It's Guy Flaming from the Pipeline Show. And when we come back, we'll be talking with him, and he'll give us a preview of the WHL champion Prince Albert Raiders.
Wayne Martin, he'll put it on goal off a leg wide. Gregor right wall. Noah Gregor behind the net. Curls, steps out on the backhand, can't get the shot. He'll turn back. Back door, Hadoop, he scores! It's over! It's over! Game 7, overtime! Hero, Dante Hadoop! Do you believe it? And the boys of 85 no longer stand alone. A new generation just brought the cup home. For the second time in franchise history, the Prince Albert Raiders are Western Hockey League champions.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys Podcast as we continue our Memorial Cup preview. And as we go out west to preview the WHL champion Prince Albert Raiders, who better to talk to than the color analyst of the Edmonton Oil Kings? He's also the host of the Pipeline Show. It's Guy Flaming. Guy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again, Steve. Appreciate it.
The Prince Albert Raiders, if we go back to the start of the WHL playoffs and you tell people that they would be the champions this year, I don't think there would be many people surprised, as personally as someone looking from the outside in. But they certainly had their tests in the WHL playoffs, including in the final against the Vancouver Giants, who they just couldn't quite seem to put away for a while there.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that after the regular season that Prince Albert had, they were the favorites going into the postseason. But they had to earn it along the way, no question. The Saskatoon Blades were a tough test for them in round two. That's their arch rival, and statistically, that was the second-best team in the conference. So we expected a tight series, and it was. Then they went up against the Edmonton Oil Kings, and the Oil Kings actually got out to a lead in that series. So the Raiders came from behind to win that one, and now we know what happened in the WHL final against the Vancouver Giants. Not just going seven games, but into overtime in game seven. So, pushed absolutely to the limit. And they're going to be the most tired team going into the Memorial Cup as well because of that win on Monday night. But, yeah, no question, the Prince Albert Raiders, the top team in the WHL this year.
Well, they'll certainly be one of many tired teams, I'd imagine, there when we look around the Memorial Cup lineup. But, and that series of Vancouver, you know, trying to take a look at it, you know, Vancouver managed to steal one in Prince Albert, which is a rink that they don't lose in often this season. And they come home, and with that 2-3-2 format, you think, okay, Vancouver, they got to try and jump on Prince Albert while they've got the home ice advantage back. And they roll in there in game three in quite possibly the most dominant period of a final in any league anywhere. Yeah. Prince Albert jumps out to a 7-0 lead, and I'd imagine at that point a lot of people figured, man, this one's over.
Well, that's got to be the game that they're probably going to be kicking themselves about all summer long. But you got to give Vancouver some credit here. They beat Prince Albert in Prince Albert twice in the series, and you know, having that opportunity, if you would have said that you could win twice there, then you're probably expecting to win that series. But they got blown out in that one game at home and lost the other one, a tight one where they were probably the better team in the game, but could not buy a goal on Ian Scott. And for me, Ian Scott's been quite the story in the playoffs for Prince Albert, and has to be one of the better goaltenders in the Canadian Hockey League.
I was going to talk about Ian Scott. Of course, it was he and Michael DiPietro who represented Canada at the World Juniors this year. And DiPietro had himself a hell of a playoff, going 13-0 with Ottawa before going down with his injury and unfortunately not being able to play the rest of the final, and Ottawa went out. But Ian Scott, certainly another scary goalie. If you're a Guelph Storm fan like myself, after having to go up against DiPietro, now you got to go up against one of the goalies is Ian Scott. He's been a rock for this team all year, has he not?
Well, he has. He's been terrific. He's done everything that you can want for him. He's even scored a goal along the way this season. But playoff MVP, and I don't think there was any question about that. I mean, he had five shutouts in the playoffs, so two of them in the final, two of them in the semifinal game, in series rather, against Edmonton. So, yeah, you can't ask for any more from your goaltender than that. Even in the games where a team happened to get three or four goals against him, I mean, I saw it firsthand against the Oil Kings. There were games where the Oil Kings were badly out shooting Prince Albert, and times when they had the momentum, but just couldn't buy a goal on Ian Scott. He was the guy who put out any cliche you want there, but he was the backbone of the victory here for Prince Albert in the playoffs.
Noah Gregor came up with a hell of a final. Of course, he had a couple of goals in the game, and this offense for Prince Albert looks pretty, you know, it's a couple guys who could really take things over, Gregor being one of them. He had 13 goals in the playoffs. But as you look at the stats for this Prince Albert team, really spread out at the same time, too. I mean, we're talking 10 guys in the playoffs who had 10 or more points, and another four players who had more than 20 points in 23 games. This is a pretty balanced offense, is it not?
It is. And what was when you have depth, it affords you the luxury that if you get a guy who goes through a slump, or, you know, two guys who suddenly can't find the back of the net, you have enough firepower where other guys can step up. And that's exactly what's happened for Prince Albert. He's a guy like Dante Hounoun, who ended up leading the, or was one of the top scorers for the Raiders in the playoffs. I think he had 1 point against the Oil Kings in a 6-game series. So, I mean, he had nothing going for him in that series. But outside of that, he had 24 points in the playoffs. And Brett Leeson, he went on an 8-game pointless streak through the playoffs, ends up leading them in scoring because he finally found his gear again Had a big start to the playoffs, then went dry against Saskatoon and half the series against the Oil Kings, but found his groove again. Noah Gregor's probably been their most consistent guy through the playoffs, and Alexi Protas is, boy, he's a handful, 6'5" and 200 and some pounds, draft eligible this year. There's definitely a lot of firepower on this Raiders team.
For those of us who haven't seen a lot of Prince Albert Raiders games and things that you can't just see by looking at a stat sheet,
yep.
You know, one of those things is defense. Who for fans of the OHL who are probably listening to this more so than the other two leagues, what do they have to watch out defensive-wise from the Prince Albert Raiders coming into this Memorial Cup?
The defensemen for the Raiders are not household names outside of the WHL at all. I mean, you probably could ask anybody watching from the OHL or the Q and might not have heard of any of the players on PA's blue line, but they kind of like that. They've kind of adopted that underdog sort of mentality on the blue line. There's really nothing outside of, you know, what they do as a group. As a defensive unit, they're big, they're strong. They have some mobile guys. They have guys who can move the puck really well, but as a unit, they're tough and they're mean and they're hard to play against. It's hard to get to the front of the net against Prince Albert, and a team that does could have success that way. But a guy like Braden Pahal, it looks like Pashtal, but it's pronounced Pahal. Braden Pahal, really good defenseman, strong. I mean, he's 6'1 and not quite 200 pounds, but really mean. Max Martin, very much not a fighter, but a tough guy to go up against. Zach Hayes is a veteran in this league and plays a rugged game as well. They have a guy named Sergei Cepego who's got more of an offensive side to him. That's kind of developed here over time, but he's also a no-shrinking violet. Caden Gooley is a 6'3" rookie this year and skates really well. His older brother is a high pick of the Buffalo Sabres, and very much the same way, same sort of player. Big, mobile, offensive guy, but still a rookie in the league. But it's kind of an unheralded defensive core that nobody likes to play against.
We've seen, of course, nobody has really beaten this team as far as the playoff series has gone. That's why they're going to the Memorial Cup. But in your opinion, what is the weak spot of this team, if any at all, or how they can be beat? I mean, of course, they've lost games throughout the playoffs. Vancouver, as you mentioned, managed to take a couple of games against them on home ice. And we've seen in the past how teams, you know, I remember the 2014 Memorial Cup thinking how, you know, when Portland and Edmonton went to the game 7 of the final and thinking, man, Guelph would go up really good against a quick offensive Portland team more than a defensive Edmonton team. Is there any type of team that would match up, would be a bad matchup for Prince Albert, or do you think that they could, you know, go up against anybody in this Memorial Cup?
I think that a team that will beat the Prince Albert Raiders will probably have to match them size-wise because they can handle speed. They're a pretty physical team, and they have some quick players as well, so I don't think you're necessarily just going to beat them with speed. You have to find a way to get to the front of the net, and that's going to be hard to do. I think the biggest obstacle right now for Prince Albert is probably going to be fatigue, and we talked about how they played up until Monday night, so they're going to be the team with the least amount of rest probably, and they have to travel the furthest as well. And they play Friday night to open the tournament. So that's not going to be a favorable setup for the Raiders. But outside of that, on the ice, you're going to have to find a way to get to the front of the net against them. If you can take away the eyes of netminder Ian Scott and get some traffic around the net, that would help. You can't take penalties against them because they have a very, very strong power play, although it's gone up and down in the playoffs. They have so many weapons that if they get on a roll, they're going to be deadly. But outside of that, you know, you could probably say the same about all four teams. You're going to have to bring your A game to beat them.
Of course, this is just the second WHL championship for the Prince Albert Raiders. They won the WHL title back in 1985, won the Memorial Cup that year too. I'd imagine for a small town team, that barn was pretty packed and crazy on Monday night. I'd imagine this is something that means a lot to all those people out there, isn't it?
Yeah, no question. And I mean, it's back-to-back years where it's been a small town from Saskatchewan. The last year it was the Swift Current Broncos who were WHL champions. And the small town communities just rally behind their team, and it's obviously the big show in town when you have 30,000 people or whatever it is, 35,000 people in Prince Albert. I mean, the fans are lining up the streets as the team pulls out of town with the bus, and They're there at the airport welcoming in the team or sending them off. So, yeah, it definitely has gripped the passion of the fans in Prince Albert, and that's obviously great to see.
Well, Gee, we thank you so much for taking a bit of time out of your day and previewing the Prince Albert Raiders for us. And, of course, I'd imagine, you know, you guys are all cheering for the WHL champions and hoping that the WHL can recapture that Memorial Cup.
Well, we'll certainly wish them the best, and I think it is kind of hard for the team to travel that far, and the travel in the WHL playoffs alone is a lot further than definitely the teams in the OHL have to go through. So they have that disadvantage already going in, but we'll see. The Raiders are definitely worthy representatives of our league.
That's Guy Flaming, the color analyst of the Edmonton Oil Kings. Of course, he's the host of the Pipeline Show, which you can find on Twitter, and we'll give you all that stuff at the end of the episode. When we come back, we preview the QMJHL with Patrick McNeil as we look at the Halifax Mooseheads and the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies.
Who's the Allemand? The Huskies sont champions de la Coupe du Président.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys Podcast. Our guest at this time is the play-by-play announcer for the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles. Welcome back to the show, Patrick McNeil. Thank you for coming on, Patrick.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. I always enjoy helping out with the broadcast.
Well, speaking of that, you know, you definitely can help us out big time here because, as many of people know, we don't get to watch many QMJHL games throughout the season, and we got a couple of really good teams coming into this Memorial Cup. The Rouyn-Noranda Huskies, for the second time in four seasons, have won the Quebec League Championship. You know, they had such an amazing regular season, and they certainly had a great playoff, only lost four games throughout the playoffs. And, of course, you have the Halifax Mooseheads, who are the host. And, hey, they're the first host in a few years to actually make it past the first round, so kudos to them on that. But they got to within two wins of the Quebec League Championship as well. Might as well start things off with the champs here. I want to talk about the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies. Just, you know, talk about the regular season here at first. Like, what a year these guys put together. I find it very odd. You know, everyone talks about that 2005 London Knights team. This Huskies team won as many games as that 05 Knights team, but, you know, nobody really talks about them in the same light.
Yeah, it's a good point. And this, part of it, I guess, is the lack of hype coming into the season. I think if you were looking through the team rosters, this was a Huskies team that was favored to win their division, and maybe people thought they could go on a deep run, but they certainly weren't expected to be a title favorite, and let alone be a team that kind of rolled through in dominant fashion. But things just clicking on all cylinders, a very well-rounded team, and a typical Rouyn-Noranda product is a very homegrown team. And you and I were kind of talking before we started recording about how the team felt and what they did at the trading period, and traditionally the Quebec League is a bit more Wild West-ish in terms of how teams build at the trade period. And Rouyn-Noranda certainly did make some trades. Don't get me wrong there. But coming into this season, they had just one player on their roster that was drafted by another team. And it was Ryan McClellan, the depth defenseman who actually came from Cape Breton. The rest of the guys were all homegrown. They got a nice boost when Jacob Lacou, drafted of Boston, comes in after the season had already started to fill one of their European spots. But they're a team, they draft really well. They build from within. And they take a lot of players that are really good junior players that don't necessarily get the spotlight of the pros. Best stat for me when you look at this Rouyn-Noranda team is they had three guys on the Super Series roster, the evaluation for the World Juniors. They had three guys that were not drafted into the NHL that had been passed over. And I assume it's the same in the OHL and the WHL. Generally, those rosters are dotted by either guys that are high-end draft eligible or guys that have already been drafted. But you look at Rouyn-Noranda, they have three guys in Felix Bubeau, Justin Bergeron, Raphael Harvey-Pinard. None of them drafted into the NHL, all passed over. The year before, Samuel Harvey was on Team Canada for the Super Series, same thing as well. So it just gives you an idea of the template that how the Huskies have built this team. It's a very well-rounded, a lot of good junior players. Peter Abbandonato led the league in scoring in both the regular season and in the playoffs before he went out with mono and then he came back. And Samuel Harvey, and that's another strong at 20-year-old. So just a team that's really strong in all aspects, and they put it together and kept it together for playoffs.
Yeah, you mentioned Peter
Abandonado.
Abandonado. I'm going to have to learn that. I'm probably going to have to say that name a lot over the next.
It's more long than it is tricky. Once you get your head around it, it's not too bad.
Exactly. But
Ryacek is probably the hardest name on their roster.
Well, and that's the thing. Doing these Q previews, you'd look at some of the rosters and go, "Oh no, this is going to be hard." But Abandonado, you mentioned he was the playoff scoring leader. He was the Huskies' leading scorer during the regular season. Went down with mono in the playoffs. Like, talk about terrible timing, but he did come back, and he was back kind of quicker than I thought someone with mono would normally be. I'm not sure, was he a regular contributor when he got back? Because I know with a lot of players, it takes a long time. They get back into the lineup, but for them to be fully 100%, it takes a long time for that to happen.
Nope.
You good? Did you lose me?
Yeah, from what I saw, he certainly was a contributor. Six points in five games, I believe, after he came back. And I guess you could say that's a slow by his high standard. He had over 100 points in the regular season. More of a playmaker than a goal scorer, but certainly put the puck in the back of the net as well. And that was a concurring storyline through the queue, and we can touch on that at the Memorial Cup on the whole, because one of Halifax's stars, Benoit Olivier Grew, also had mono, and there was talk that when that happened, it was so serious that he might miss the Memorial Cup, but he turned out he came back in the third round. And again, when Abandonado went down, it was thought, he's probably going to be out for the rest of the playoffs. And if the Huskies make the Memorial Cup, he won't be there. But he's back, and it's great to see. The Huskies had a couple of other bumps in the road, I guess we can say. Jacob Black, who missed the last game of the playoffs with an injury, and he's lost a lot of weight related to that. But they're confident that he'll be back. Or pardon me, actually, it's Jacob Nabu that's lost a lot of weight. But it looks like Lacou will be back. But Jacob Nabu on the blue line, one of Roy Noranda's key defensemen, played the first two games in the final and then went out. And they're not likely he's going to play. So that's a big loss for them. But other than that, getting Abandonado back was really big. And they have a very deep offense, 820 goal scorers this year. But certainly he's one of the guys that's making it tick.
Well, you talk about defensemen, and you certainly have to talk about Noah Dobson. Of course, he was here last year with the Teton, a Memorial Cup champion, a QMJHL champion now for 2 years in a row. I mean, I believe he won the playoff MVP as well, if I'm not mistaken. This is a guy that is a game changer for sure.
Yep, plays a ton, and he was, as you said, the playoff MVP, and certainly had to play more after Nuu went out in the last four games of the series, but Huskies didn't miss a beat in part due to Dobson's contributions. And it's interesting, the Huskies were so dominant in the first half of the season, but then they decided to spend the assets anyway to go and get Noah Dobson and get Joel Teasdale up front. And Dobson obviously more than paying dividends, especially with an injury on the blue line like they've had, and just a guy who competes in all situations. You didn't really see it as much in the first half of the season. He was in Bathurst. He knew he was getting traded. Everybody knew it. Nobody knew where he was going to go. He just knew he was going to be traded somewhere. So maybe a bit hard for him to get motivated, but you see him go to the World Juniors, and he's just, the speculation as to whether he'll be playing with the Islanders next year. He's that good that he wouldn't look at a place, and a difference maker. Obviously he'll be tested in the Memorial Cup against even better competition, but I don't think the Huskies are regretting ponying up all that they paid for him now.
Got to talk about Samuel Harvey, who's been a rock in the net for the Huskies. Not often that you see a team with an overage goalie at one of these, though it's not unheard of at the same time. But here's a guy who's been putting in work, just one game shy of 200 career QMJHL games in the regular season, plus another 45 in the playoffs. And, of course, he's been so good this regular season and playoff.
Yeah, hard to argue the numbers there for sure. And the one number, I guess, that hurts Samuel Harvey is the height. If you talk to scouts, they'll say 6'2 is the magic number. He's 6'1, so he's just under, so that's probably why he hasn't been drafted. But like I said, he was on the Canada team for the Super Series last year and actually got an invite to World Junior Camp, and I was the last goaltender cut. But he's been great for them the last few years. And you talk about the work, and it is true he's put in his work, but the Huskies actually had another capable goaltender, Zach Emond, and he played his fair share of games in the regular season. And maybe that's helped keep Harvey fresh in the playoffs, and actually looked like they were going to try at least temporarily to platoon the two goaltenders. Harvey gets the win in game one of the playoffs. Then Emond suffers a loss in game two, and Emond is actually injured right now, but Harvey has been able to handle the workload and certainly an ace in the hole. And again, just a very complete team in all aspects. And Samuel Harvey is much of a part of that as anybody on the Huskies.
definitely got to talk about the first round of the playoffs for Arun Naranda. And usually when you're talking about a league champion, that first round of the playoffs is usually your easy road through and sweeps and stuff. And it was certainly looked like a total mismatch this year. The 59-win Huskies going up against a Shawinigan Cataract team that, if they were in any other league, shouldn't have been anywhere near the playoffs. I think they won 14 games this year, had a long losing streak going in. And suddenly, through four games in that first series, the Cataracts actually managed to win two against the Huskies. Like, they actually pushed this team to the point where I remember seeing someone say that when the series was tied 2-2, they called it already the greatest upset in sport.
Yeah, I don't even disagree with that. You talk about Shawinigan coming into the playoffs slumping. There was a real turtle race for the last spot in the Q playoffs this year between Shawinigan and St. John. And St. John actually surpassed Shawinigan for the last spot late in the regular season, but Shawinigan got an OT loss on the last day to get themselves in, and they went into the playoffs on, I think, a 14-game losing streak, and then they end up winning 2-4 against a team they finished 88 points behind in the regular season, which is just incomprehensible. This would be like Belarus beating Sweden twice, I guess you could say, or even more ridiculous than that, really. And it's crazy to think that, you know, Shawinigan almost wasn't in the playoffs. And they end up getting the two wins against Arun Naranda. I don't know what happened in those two games. Obviously, the Huskies carried the play, but still, there shouldn't be any excuse for losing those two games. And I think some people were wondering what the effect was going to be coming out of that series, and could it go either way? And then when Arun Naranda swept their way through the next two rounds, like, you knew, okay, this was just a wake-up call. And then sweeping Victoriaville, it was back to business as usual. But one of the more perplexing couple of weeks, I guess we can say, in Q history.
Every team seems to have that those times where they can't get a win together. Of course, that, you know, you mentioned the two losses that they had against Shawinigan. They really did wake up after that. But of course, Halifax managed to beat them twice in the league final as well. No one's managed to beat them in a 7-game series, but this Memorial Cup is not about a 7-game series. You know, you lose just a couple games and you're in trouble. Is there any type of weakness that you find on this team, or more apropos, would it be more of a, what do other teams need to do to beat this team?
Well, if you can just put some pressure on them and get them pinned in their end, which is obviously easier said than done, I would think. Don't give them a chance to break out, because they're really a quick team with a puck, and part of that comes back to the small ice they play on back home in Ren, although obviously they've been able to adapt that game to the other rinks that they play in around the queue. And I guess that's kind of what Halifax has had the most success about against them in the final. To me, the final Halifax and Arun Naranda proved two things. It proved that Arun Naranda was clearly the better team, but it also proved that Halifax could definitely beat them in a one-off, which is, of course, all they need to do for the Memorial Cup. And, you know, they're going to be playing against, no disrespect to Halifax, Halifax is a fine team, but both Prince Albert and Guelph, to me, on paper, are stronger teams than Halifax is. So Arun Naranda is going to be more tested. And not to the same degree, but we almost saw a playoff-type atmosphere when the Huskies had that. They were going for the CHL record for the longest winning streak. They were playing Drummondville, who was the second-best team in the league, and Halifax ended up upsetting them in the third round. And Drummondville actually beat Rouen in Drummondville, and they poured off the bench like they'd won Game 7 of the playoff series. It was a big game for Drummondville. So that was, I guess, one kind of big-game atmosphere that the Huskies came up short in. So, you know, you're going to get into some situations where it's one and done coming up, and, you know, certainly not a slam dunk that they'll be able to sail through those with any ease.
And a Huskies team that is not that far removed from losing in overtime of the Memorial Cup final a few years ago against London, and a couple guys on this team who were on that Huskies team in 2016. So they've got some unfinished business to do. Want to shift over to our host, the Halifax Mooseheads, certainly the best host we've had in a while. You can never say a team is unworthy of being at the Memorial Cup when they make their league final, really. And Halifax had a great regular season with 49 wins and a really good playoff, despite a little bit of a, like the Shawinigan, or not, sorry, like the Arun Naranda Huskies, they with Shawinigan, Halifax had a bit of a bump in the road in the first round against Quebec.
Yeah, what's funny about that is, of course, because of the 100th Memorial Cup, the very special 100th Memorial Cup, as your co-host Brian Thompson would say, they played the Memorial Cup in Regina last year, so it disrupted the rotation. So the Qs had to wait 4 years to host, which is actually kind of a good thing from a pomp and circumstance point of view, because it's the league's 50th season this year. But you look back to the last time the Q hosted, it was Quebec that was the host. and Quebec ran into Cape Breton in the first round in 2015. Yours truly's first chance to call a playoff success of any sort, because Quebec was the heavy favorite in that series. They were fourth in the league and Cape Breton was 13th, and Quebec needed to go seven games to win that series. And I was constantly reminded of that this year when Halifax was playing Quebec. And unlike the Rouyn-Noranda-Shawinigan series, Shawinigan managed to get out some wins. But in the back of your head, you knew there was not really a chance Shawinigan was going to win the series. That was not the case with Quebec and Halifax. There was very much a possibility that Quebec could win the series. They win the first two games in Halifax. Halifax comes back. They win a couple in Quebec City. It's tied, and you think they've righted the ship. But then Quebec wins the last game of the 2-3-2 format, and all of a sudden the pressure's on for Halifax to have to win. And they only won game 7-3-1. So this was not a team that was sailing through the first round. And Halifax, even when they were successful in the regular season, every now and then you'll get a team that's good on paper and the results match what they are on paper, but yet they leave you wanting more for some reason. And that was Halifax a lot of the regular season this year. They were getting results, but the fan base was just, no, this team, there's something missing here. And I think that was reflected through the series against Quebec. They turned it on against Moncton, though, sweeping the Wildcats in what was expected to be a closer series and then upsetting Drummondville. And that's really right of the ship. But it's been an interesting year in Halifax because things you wouldn't expect to go as well as they are have gone well. And then there's been disappointments. To me, the one thing that stands out is the imports. I mean, even people that don't follow the Q specifically probably know Halifax's legacy with import players. You see it in the NHL, like Timo Meier, Nick Ehlers, so many stars that have come through Halifax. And this year, in the year where perhaps they needed most, they have Marcel Barinka, a young player, hasn't played a ton, and then Ostap Safin, who was a force for St. John last year, who's done nothing, 2 points in 23 playoff games. He suffered with injuries, so they've been muscling through without that. On the flip side, you look at Samuel Lassalainen. I know a little bit more about Halifax, obviously, because we see them a lot more than we do Rouyn-Noranda, but Samuel Lassalainen was kind of a key third-line grinder for Bathurst last year, and this year he scores almost 50 goals. So it's been an intriguing year for Halifax, and they've certainly proven that they are good enough to win in a one-off showdown.
Offensively, I mean, you take a look at their stats here from the playoffs, and one guy really stands out above the rest, and that would be, and again, I'll try and say the name here, Raphael Lavoie. He, of course, put up 20 goals in the playoffs, which is just absolutely ridiculous. 32 points for the Mooseheads. He definitely seems to be the guy leading the way for them.
Yeah, from the faceoff circles in, he's an absolute monster. Just the size and the shot that he has. He was expected by a lot of people to be a first-round draft pick in the NHL, late birthday, he's 18. And you look at him at the beginning of the year, kind of what I was just talking about, you know, getting some results, but maybe, you know, people expecting a little bit more from him. Gets cut from the World Juniors and then comes back and just on an absolute tear, especially in the playoffs. He somewhat slowed down, if you can use that term, with 5 points in the final and only 3 goals, which would be a step down from his ridiculous production otherwise. But just kind of your pure goal scorer type player. And as I said, a guy who's challenging to be picked in the top 10 of the first round in the NHL draft. And certainly he has a platform in the Memorial Cup to further that case, but nothing short of impressive in the playoffs from him.
Their goaltending, Alexis Gravel.
Alexi Gravel, yeah.
Gravel, thank you. See, that's why, that's why you're here. Of course, you know, he's the guy leading the way for Halifax, but, you know, kind of like in Guelph, the numbers aren't overly impressive. Not to say that they're bad by any stretch, but a 2.76 goals against, 9.18 save percentage. You know, but at the same time, I'd imagine this is a guy that can steal you some games if need be, especially in this type of a one-off format.
He's a very interesting goaltender to watch. He's the type of goalie who could make some really difficult saves and then let go of a goal that maybe he should have back. And also the type of goaltender that even when he's playing really well, doesn't necessarily look technically sound in how he does it. So watch Gravel, if nothing, for the fact he's not a conventional goaltender to watch just because of how he plays the puck and whatnot. But he, at the end of the day, he's got the job done for Halifax this year. Much like Rouyn-Noranda, they have a good backup in Cole McLaren. The Cole was very much sheltered in the starts he was getting. If you know how the schedule in the Q works this year, there were two really bad teams in the Maritime Division in Bathurst and St. John. So I assume at least part of Cole McLaren's very impressive stats were victories he had over them. Haven't had to see him put in any sort of playoff pressure, but he had a good regular season. But Gravel, as I said, he's an intriguing goaltender to watch. He's been good enough for Halifax thus far, and he certainly hasn't weighed them down. I think that's what they were hoping for. NHL drafted goaltender by Chicago, so we'll see how he plays under the pressure of the national stage.
We've talked in this episode with Prince Albert and Rune Noranda about, you know, what are their weaknesses and how they can be beat, even though they haven't been beaten in a playoff series. Well, Halifax has been beaten in a playoff series, but as we also mentioned, you know, in a one-game situation, who knows what can happen. But for teams to beat Halifax, you know, what are their weaknesses and what will teams have to do to beat this Moosehead squad, who, regardless without being a league champion, still a very solid team?
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because Rune Noranda and Halifax had the best goals against in the queue. Rune Noranda was one and Halifax was two. And I was actually almost surprised to see Halifax has had a better defensive record as opposed to their forwards. But I don't think the forward depth is quite there. I talked about how Rouen had the 820 goal scorers. Not the case for Halifax. And maybe playing in a tournament like the Memorial Cup, there's TV timeouts every game. I hope that was the case in the Q final as well. Maybe that allows them to, play their top guys a little bit more. I just don't see Halifax as being as deep of a team as Rouen Noranda, presumably Prince Albert and Guelph also. And that's probably one of their weaknesses going forward. You look on the blue line, Jared McIsaac's, you know, exceptional on defense, but no real other stars there, although Justin Barron's very close. So I would say that, you know, Halifax not as deep of a team, and that's something that could be their undoing, but short tournament, so I think they're certainly in the mix, and this is probably one of the more intriguing tournaments we've seen in terms of every team having a unique story. Rouen and Prince Albert were so dominant through the regular season in their respective leagues, but got pushed enough in the playoffs that, you know, they're vulnerable. I mean, Prince Albert needed to go to OT game seven, but they're both very dominant teams. You look at Guelph, made so many acquisitions, so they're such a different team than what they were. And then Halifax is a team that's on home ice and was good enough to make the final. So every team looks pretty strong in their own way. So I think this might be one of the stronger crops we've seen in the Memorial Cup in the last few years.
Definitely, especially when you have a host that doesn't go out in the first round for once or early.
Definitely brings the tournament up.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be no team has got that month off going in. It's going to be a war with these four teams. And certainly we thank you, Patrick, for coming on and giving us a preview of the Q champs with the Huskies and, of course, the host Mooseheads.
Yeah, no problem. Enjoy doing it. And hopefully I'll have a chance to see you in Halifax.
That's Patrick McNeil. He's the play-by-play voice of the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles and always a good, reliable source for us on information on the queue. When we come back, we wrap up this preview show for the Memorial Cup in Halifax.
And Rossi trying to get to it out near the blue line and loses possession to Suzuki. And Suzuki up ice from the left wing in over the line. Suzuki trying to get away from Felber. Spins away from him. Still with that puck back of the net. Suzuki back out to the blue line to Phillips. Phillips over to Durzi. Durzi shoots. That's blocked loose in front. They score! Ratcliffe! 6-2 Guelph.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys Podcast as we wrap up this Memorial Cup preview show. Really like to thank once again Guy Flaming and Patrick McNeil for coming on and giving us some previews on the WHL, QMJHL champions, as well as the host Halifax Mooseheads. You can follow Guy Flaming at TPS_Guy on Twitter, and you can follow Patrick McNeil on Twitter at CBSE_PBP.
_LMNOP.
A lot of underscores, a lot of letters.
Don't forget, everyone, you have until Monday to send in your submissions to Steve McLean and find the Guelph Storm hidden swastika.
No. God, please, don't get me kicked out of press row.
You said you wanted to be with the fans during Guelph games anyways.
I'm just going to walk in to...
Just trying to help.
I'm going to walk in to get my dinner before one of the games and just everyone's just going to be staring at me now.
You don't have the new jersey anyway, so you won't be wearing the swastika.
I actually do have the new jersey now.
Nazi. I'm
just imagining Randall from Clerks 2 in Nazi douchebag. Oh, jeez. Okay, I think that one's gone off the rails, hasn't it? All I got to say is I cannot wait to get it from Halifax. And probably by the time a lot of people are listening to this, I'll already be there. So.
How many Donairs are you going to have?
I've never had a Donair before, so I'm looking forward to that.
You go to King of Donair. They got the best ones.
I've heard they're pretty good, so.
They also have wrestling-themed t-shirts.
Really?
like King of Donair, but it's Hulkamania style. It's pretty cool.
So how many do I have to put you down for?
No, I'm good. I'm good. Okay. I just want my patch and my puck.
Well, hopefully we... have you seen the patch? There was a,
no.
A picture came out of one of Welch's jerseys already done up in the patch.
Ooh.
So, no, and also, in the past, how many years of the Memorial Cup has the center ice, you know, logo been? They just put the two CHO logos up. Now it's like that Memorial Cup logo is like one giant center ice logo.
Thank God. The double CHL logo sucked.
Yeah.
And so, they had it forever.
Yeah. There was already a picture of Halifax, the ice, you know, redone at Scotiabank, you know, Metro Center, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, it's just one giant logo of what is essentially the patch, right? The Memorial Cup logo for Halifax. So anyway, that's what we have
fun.
To. Yeah. Prince Albert versus Halifax Friday night opens it up. And as usual, we're going to have some post-game content for you.
We're doing every game this year like we did 2 years ago. We're not just doing, like, the Guelph games. We will be doing every single game because we like to talk and hear ourselves talk.
Yes. It's a fun little thing to do. And plus, Brian doesn't want this to be a total vacation for me. This is a working vacation.
Always.
So we all hope you guys tune in for all of our shows, as you know, and after every Memorial Cup game, it's going to be fun. So you can follow the OHL Fanboys podcast, of course, on Spotify and iTunes and on Twitter. Just look out for OHL Fanboys there. Brian is on Twitter at Toast84, and I'm on Twitter at SteveMcLean888.
Send the swastikas there.
Oh, God damn. I hate you, Brian. I hate you so much.
I'll miss you.
For Brian Thompson, why, I don't know. I am Steve McLean. So long, everybody. Have a fun Memorial Cup. All right, so we're going to talk post-game Friday.
Nope, I'm out.
Why? Do you, Lauren, have plans or something?
No, I actually mean I'm out. I'm sitting this tournament out.
What the hell do you mean you're sitting this tournament out? We do this every year.
Relax. I called in some backup. You boys play nice now.
Boys? What the fuck? Who's this?
This is the worst of all possible worlds. This is the worst thing that could happen. You're coming east. You're coming into our territory. Get ready, bud. You're not going to be able to handle it.
I tell you what, Johnny, beer's on me.
Let's go. You are on our turf now, boy.
Who the hell are you guys?
This week, the OHL Fanboys meet the Halifax Herdcast.